mentally challenged. All right, today we had finished up to on Saturdays. This is for the new people. This is our 10th time through the book on Saturdays. We've been every Saturday for 10 years. And we finished on our 10th time through We Agnostics. So we've covered the information for the first two steps. And then today we're going to look at the information from Carry This Message by Joe McHugh. I couldn't find my copy of my book this morning. It may be early Alzheimer's. I'm looking for things all day long at the house. And I don't know if any of you do that. I did get a little lecture about that this morning, trying to remember where I put things. But anyway, the book can be ordered on Amazon. It's a way of him, the man who started the Joe and Charlie meetings and did 35 meetings a year for 20 years all around the country, how he looks at the steps from a sponsor-sponsee perspective. So it's written a little bit different than the steps we took, which is the book he wrote first, where he went over the steps and his view of the steps as he had worked the, studied the book and did carried the message. And so this is a little bit different. It's very, very good. I looked at it yesterday, and it's got great information. If I don't have your number, I was trying to decide whether to send the links out anymore or not, and people said they really want them. So if somebody doesn't want to get them, some people don't want to get texts all the time, just come after the meeting, let me know, and I'll try to take you off the list. But I noticed a lot of people wanted to continue that. It only takes me 3 or 4 minutes. I figured out how to do it. We'll go through this. We'll probably only go through a few pages, but it's really, really good review of steps 1 and 2. And as this is a sheet that's the assignment for step 2. For each step, there's an assignment. And it says, ask the sponsor to read chapters 2, 3, and 4. We've done that. Chapter 2 is there's a solution. Chapter 3 is more about alcoholism. Chapter 4 is We Agnostics. And he suggests that they write a summary of one page, which is actually a very good idea of each chapter. And then he, for the sponsor, I'm supposed to go over these chapters with the sponsee. One reason that I thought the site might be helpful to somebody is that you could actually listen to those chapters as I read them and teach on it on the site. And it says the sponsee should be able to see and state the solution is power, a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity. Chapter 2, there's a solution, describes the solution in detail. We talked about it on Wednesday night. Roland Hazard going to Dr. Young in Switzerland in 1932 and was told by Dr. Young that he was hopeless. He had the mind of a chronic alcoholic and he'd never seen anyone recover. So Roland had spent a year in therapy and he thought that was pretty bad news because he'd been in therapy for a year, but then he drank after 5 days leaving Switzerland. And Dr. Young said he didn't realize that he was an alcoholic. So I don't think we can blame the doctor. Sometimes we're not real honest, you know, and sometimes we don't really tell them everything that they want to know because we don't want to discourage them. And so, but he did say that there's this phenomenon he's seen where there's a spiritual change in a person. Their whole personality changes. And it's a rearrangement of their attitudes and outlook on life. And he was talking about they go from being totally self-absorbed to move out of that state where they're dependent on God and others. And then Roland went to the Oxford group in New York with Reverend Shoemaker, and Reverend Shoemaker took in Ebby Thatcher, and Roland actually rescued Ebby from the asylum in Vermont. They were going to put him in an asylum because he shot up houses, and he was that's what they did with alcoholics who were dangerous. They put him in prison. And then Roland Hazard knew Ebby and went up there, and then Ebby did the steps in 60 days, the Oxford group steps, which we're going to talk about in here. And then he was told he had the testimony, he had to witness to somebody about his change. So he found Bill W. He thought Bill would be a mess, and he was right. Bill had had enough booze that day, he said, to make it through the night. He was dying. Ebby's there, and we're here today. So Roland was dying, Ebby was dying, Bill was dying, yet they did something that we have today, and that's this program. And so more about alcoholism talks about the insanity before the first drink. Right before we drink, we must tell ourselves it's okay or we wouldn't do it, right? But 10 minutes before, we could have absolutely sworn, taken a lie detector test, that we would never drink again and passed it. Anybody else do that? Take the lie detector test, pass it, and then head right to the liquor store, because our mind can't tell us there's anything wrong with it once we decide to get that obsession in the mind. Chapter 4 is about preparing ourselves to have a relationship with God and changing our attitude and towards God and understanding of God. And so he says, give the sponsor only a day or two. They didn't waste any time. He says, it won't do any good to sit for a month thinking you're powerless over alcohol. Your life is unmanageable. As the sponsor, your goal is to see whether the sponsor believes in God. Often you'll find the sponsor is an agnostic. And so that's why we have these things that some people say you should take your time to work the steps. But remember, alcoholism isn't when you drink, it's when you're sober. And how long do you want to live sober? The speaker says, sober, son of a bitch, everything's real. And how long do you want to live sober without a relationship with God and the power to live? And so think about that. I talked about it with Step Zero. I wrote it on the site, A Thought on Step Zero, which this guy Joe Hawk is when you've had the grace of God to admit you're completely defeated, but you haven't worked any of the steps. And he says, how long can you stay on Step Zero before you're gonna drink again? And then he makes the point, how many steps do you need to take before you're gonna drink? And it was a very powerful talk. He died a few years ago. He helped me a lot. He was a really good speaker. And an agnostic, remember, is not that you don't... some people believe in God and even pray, but they're agnostic. And why? How can that be? Well, the way Joe and Charlie define it, and it made sense to me, is an agnostic means without knowledge, agnos, without knowledge of God. And they talk about you can pray to God, you can believe there's a God, but if you've never used God, if you've lived a self-centered life, then you don't really have any knowledge of God's power in a relationship with God. And it's working the steps, you get a relationship with God, so you're no longer, you know that God's there for you, and you have true faith and trust. So in the next page it says, recognizing the solution. And he says, my friend's suggestion would seem to me a novel idea. It's a novel idea for somebody who didn't want to think about God and had shut his mind to God. Bill W. argued with Ebby. He's drinking in his kitchen about God while Ebby's offering him help. Does that sound like alcoholism? It says, why don't you choose your own conception of God? And then I looked at the statement, I've read it a million times, but I saw some new stuff. It's from, I think, page 10 or 11 in Bill's story. That statement hit me hard. It melted the icy intellectual mountain. So he had built this icy intellectual mountain, and he lived in the shadow of his intellect, this icy intellectual mountain, and shivered many years. See, he was separated from God. He lived in this icy intellectual mountain he had built. And he was in it in the darkness. And then he stood in the sunlight at last. He moved out away from that into the sunlight. And he said the only thing that he had to do was be willing to believe in a power greater than himself. So all he had to do was change his idea about God. And he moved from living his whole life in this intellectual mountain. Remember, when we live in reason, we don't have any power except our power. And so he moved to the sunlight, so he had blocked himself with his own mind. And all he had to do was be willing to believe. It doesn't take a lot in a power greater than himself. And step two says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So came to believe, that's you changing your mind about things. It says nowhere in the big book does it tells us how to work steps 1 and 2. I was joking that I think the reason people like the 12 and 12 is because the step chapters are numbered. So they can read step 1 1 week and step 2 the next. That's not good or bad. The purpose of the 12 and 12 was not to work the steps. It was essays teaching his thoughts about the steps. So they really don't cover 1 and 2 with, like, say, now we're at step 1 in the big book. He says, how are you working steps 1 and 2? And I don't think you really work steps 1 and 2. They're not really action steps. They're an experience and an admission. What was your experience in your life? Were you powerless over alcohol? Was your life unmanageable? You are living your life. What was your experience? And he says, step 1, you work drinking in the bars. There's probably a lot of truth to that. In these steps, we are gathering information. My sponsor, Cliff, used to say, my first sponsor, I have a second sponsor now. My first sponsor used to, the guy would talk and he'd be blabbering, and it was obvious that they were fighting the whole thing. So he would mumble, buy him some more beer, get him some more to drink. You see, if you're not defeated, I can't make you defeated, it's your experience. In the steps, we're gathering your information. Step 3 is the first step because it's an actual decision. You're making a decision. Someone asked Frank Buckman. He's the co-founder of the Oxford Group. They were started in 1910. Then, of course, he went to Reverend Shoemaker, met him in China. Reverend Shoemaker came back and was the Oxford Group head at the Calvary Church, where Roland Ebbe went, and then Bill eventually went too. The Oxford Groups went to Akron in 1934, and Dr. Bob went to that group. Get the picture, how it all came together. So Frank Buckman says, your program is a life-changing, and this is the Oxford Group, was a program where people were trying to practice the spiritual principles of Christianity. They were trying to live a life based upon those principles and change their behavior. So he says, it's a life-changing program. You surrender, you examine your sins, you confess and share, make restitution a witness. You see where our 6 steps came from? Why would anyone undertake such a thing? I like this. Calamity. Don't we talk about that? Now, calamity is a bad thing. And I looked up the definition. What did I do with it? Calamity is, I don't know, I'm losing my mind. Oh, well, we talk about desperation of a drowning. Calamity is a disaster. It's an event that happens that's really bad. And so we talk about the desperation of a drowning man, right? And has anybody ever been drowning for a little bit? Anybody ever go in the ocean, get caught in the undertow? It's a very scary experience. Now, when you're caught in the undertow and somebody holds an oar up, you don't say, I'm going to think about this, right? You grab it. And that's what they wanted people to have who came to the program. So they kind of selected the ones that were desperate. The ones who were desperate didn't even go to the meetings. They didn't even work with them. Steps 1 to establish the calamity. The first 2 steps are really the preparation for the program. They are vital. Vital means necessary for life. It comes from vitae. They have to be done. As Bill Wilson found out, the program won't work without them. And notice they talk about the program, which is the steps. And we interchange fellowship and program a lot here. But the fellowship is a group of people who are supposedly doing the program together. They have a program of recovery. And all the first 40 people got sober in the Oxford group. There were about, I don't know, 60 or 70 people sober when the big book was published, and there were, what, 30 or so people in this room. So think about it, how they had a message to carry to the world. People focused on changing their lives. They had people from all walks of life who were dissatisfied with their lives or dissatisfied with their spiritual progress. These were people who wanted to change their lives the way they acted and thought. They were mostly Protestant, and they studied the Bible. And it was started in 1910. Is somebody making fun of me? All right. Brian's getting, Brian, I love Brian. Interestingly, most were active members of churches, so being an active member of church didn't help you become a change your life, at least these people. They found that by using the Oxford Group principles, they could make real changes in their lives. So this was a program of spiritual principles to change and lead a spiritual life. And we took our program from that. When alcoholics started going to the Oxford groups, the recovered alcoholics, Bill, Dr. Bob, and the rest of the first 40 people, they would go to people's homes and spend a couple hours talking with them and taking them through step one. Dr. Bob actually went to the hospital, and they had he had a five-day program. And then when they left, they went to the meeting. And he gave them one day off when they got in to get kind of the shakes and everything. And then he went to them, and he'd ask them if they believed it actually in Jesus Christ, and if they did, get down on their knees and ask him to save them. And if they didn't do that, then he couldn't work with them. It was a Christian beginning. Now we just ask you to believe in God of your understanding. But they didn't mess around. Then they would go through the steps, and then they would come to the meeting. And then the people who he didn't do in the hospital, when they came, he took them up to the third step room, and they had to do the third step on their knees, and he had written the third step. It's a little different than ours. You can get that on the internet, Dr. Bob's third step. It's the same ideas. And if they didn't, they voted on whether the guy was really serious or not. And if they didn't think he was serious, he wasn't allowed to the meeting. And then when they worked, they would tell their own stories and see whether Philo realized he was powerless over alcohol. And it's interesting, the word, I think a lot of people realized I was powerless over things before I got here, you see. Was anybody else realized you were powerless? But I had to realize it. And powerless is, we use that term a lot, but what does it really mean? It means that you can't move your car if it's in park. Anybody try to push their car when it's in park? It's not going to happen. That's powerless. And I think sometimes we think we're like 99% powerless. We you know what I'm saying? It's a true admission of powerless. And then they would ask it, and they would come back in a few days. When they returned to next visits, they wanted to be convinced that the prospect believed in God. So what they really were trying to say is, are you defeated enough to be willing to believe in a power that can help you? And they had to work the first two steps with the person before taking him to an Oxford group meeting. And so it doesn't really take a lot of time to admit you're powerless, does it? Anybody here ever get really defeated when they came in here? Anybody have that moment? It did take a lot at that time for you to admit that you're powerless. Now, the one thing I've noticed, and I've probably done it myself, is that you get really powerless. You remember that moment. But after 30 days, you say, well, you know, maybe it wasn't that bad, you know? And I had one guy who was powerless because his wife kicked him out, and he got back in the house, and he wasn't powerless anymore. It's interesting how that could change. And that's our ego. I think the gift that God's given me, he's given me so many gifts, is that I know I can still feel it, what it was like the moment I was completely defeated. I don't ever lose that. And that's what we're supposed to keep alive at meetings, that moment of complete defeat. We don't want to forget that, because then we won't take step one. And I think Dawn made a really good point. We were talking about step one, and how Bill was saved by his step one in the lobby of the Mayflower, because it says fear gripped him when he thought about the bar. He looked at the bar. He went to the doorway. And he says, fear gripped him. He shivered because he understood how powerless he was. And if he went in that room, he wouldn't have any power. And then God said, turn around, go down here, and find someone to talk to. So the third step is really the first step in the program. It's the first step of action because it's a decision to do the program. Step three is you're deciding to take the steps. Now, another thing that's misunderstood, the decision to take the steps won't change me. You can decide all day long and still be a self-centered you-know-what. You can give your life to God at 9 o'clock and run the whole day, run the show, and make a complete mess of everything. And then at night you say, well, God, where were you? Anybody do that? Where were you? God, I needed you. Well, you didn't ask for help. So he started with the doctor's opinion. So the first step is really a doctor's opinion up to page 45. And then on page 45 of Weagnosis, they talk about lack of power. That's our dilemma. And then the rest of that chapter talks about God, changing our mind about God and where God is. And then it's a summary of that. We read it every meeting, and Steve read it today. We were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. Anybody agree with that? Yeah. Now, the one thing, and I'm not going to go into that today, you're thankful, is what actually makes you an alcoholic. Should I discuss that? What actually makes a person an alcoholic? Now, I can't put alcohol in my body, and if I do, I'll drink too much, right? And so that's a condition that I have. It's like an allergy. So people have penicillin allergies, and they're fine. They just don't drink, right? And then I had an obsession of the mind that told me that drinking was a good idea. And I would drink even when I didn't want to. Anybody else have that? But what really makes me an alcoholic is alcohol did something for me that I could not do for myself. It changed the way I felt. It released the ease and comfort, right? We seek it, and it. When I was living sober, life wouldn't go well, and I would want to drink, and it changed my perception of reality. Now, if chocolate milk had done that, I would have drank a lot of chocolate milk. It didn't do that. And actually, anything that'll do that, I'll abuse. And my mind got conditioned that if you don't like the way you feel, get a drink. And so my mind got damaged. So after a while, when I didn't feel well, my mind would say, get a drink. And then I'd drink. Did anybody go to the liquor store and say, you know, I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. I'm self-centered. I'm full of fear and anger and shame and guilt. Get me a bottle. We don't do that, but that's actually what it is. So my alcohol did something for me I could not do for myself. And then in the promises, I suddenly realized that God can do for me what I cannot do for myself, and God can keep me from drinking. And also when I'm having a bad day, God can change the way I see things. So we substitute God for alcohol. Alcohol was not my problem, it was a solution. And said, no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Does anybody believe that? I don't know why they put probably in there, because if they didn't, somebody would try to prove them. And God could and would if he were sought. Now it doesn't say he might. It says could and would if he sought. Now, there's a condition. So God can save everybody in this room. Everybody in this room can be saved. And I'm not going to get into the New Testament, but there's nothing in here, no person here that cannot be saved. All you have to do is seek God and believe in him and then follow these rules. So God can and would if he were sought. These three pertinent ideas are essentially steps one and two. The first steps give us the information we need to make the decision in step three. So step three is really a result of having experienced one and two, right? If you're completely hopeless and you believe that there's hope, you're going to decide to seek the power, right? So the decision, the intensity of the decision that you make in step three will reflect the intensity of your powerlessness. And some people make a very intellectual decision in step three, and they want their lives to get a little bit better, but it's not that powerful surrender like Gary talks about that we have to make when we're really done. And then we have to keep that surrender going. Chuck C, who a lot of us love, he helped so many people in a new pair of glasses. He was 15 years sober, and he sat in his chair and he said, damn. He says, I have to surrender all the time. He realized he had to completely surrender all the time. He would never get to a point in his life where he didn't have to surrender. And we talked about that when we read step 11, that it says the first thing in the morning before I do my plans, right, my plans, I have to ask God to direct my thinking. Divorcing it from selfishness, society, self-centered motives. I have to surrender every day. In fact, for me, I'm sicker than others. I have to surrender all the time because my self-centeredness kicks in all the time. It says being convinced, and we that's on page 60. We are at step three. You're at step three, and then that's where you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to God as we understood Him. So there are three pertinent ideas: where alcoholic cannot manage your own lives. This is step one. And the other thing is, you can never manage your own life. And not only that, you can't manage any area of your life. You've got to give them everything. So some people want to get rid of some of the things, and they'll keep that. I'll take care of work, but you fix the rest of my life. That won't work. And also, it's a permanent separation. You're fired permanently. So when you fire yourself, you have to fire yourself forever. You can't fire yourself for like 30 days. It's got to be forever. And basically what Chuck C was saying, you have to fire yourself every morning. Michael, you're fired. Now, if I had a bad day, it's because I rehired myself. And so I don't want to rehire myself. I want to put myself permanently retired from management. Dan, God bless him, he died a year ago. He's just say management is not my business, right? God, what did he used to say? Why is a management question? And we're not in management, so we don't ask why. And it says, probably knew a human power could relieve their alcoholism. God couldn't. What if he were sought? He says, you know, when we take step one, we are already powerless over alcohol. I like that already. It's in italics. But I was always powerless over alcohol. Anybody else always powerless over alcohol? So we read that line that's very powerful. It says, when I became an alcoholic. Now, I was an alcoholic for a long time before I became an alcoholic. So how did I become an alcoholic? I was crushed by a self-imposed crisis. That's what they're talking about. You're crushed. And it was self-imposed that I could not postpone or evade. We had that moment when we had that crisis that we could not postpone or evade anymore. And that's when I realized I was truly powerless over alcohol. So if you haven't been crushed yet, and the other thing, alcoholics can be crushed a lot. We can get like crushed, but then we kind of re-expand and then we get crushed. And it takes a lot to crush an alcoholic self-centered. And it says, when we take two, we came to believe that a power granted itself could restore us to sanity. But there's always been this power. You see, that's what the agnostic talks about. We've all had this power inside of us, right? We just never used it. And so I was always powerless, and I always had this power, but I just never used it. Don't you feel kind of silly when you see that? Don't you wish you'd used it 20 years before you got here? Maybe 30. Depends how old you are. But we have just come to believe it. We have just become aware of the possibility. Now look at the word here. You always were powerless. You always had the power. But you become aware of it. And remember, we talk about a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. You have to be aware of your problem to seek the solution. And so I'll just read a few more and we'll open up. These are the two realizations that required for step three. And when you take step three, you make a decision. Remember, all thought is born in action. And so you decide in your mind to do this. And then all improvement and progress come through the steps. It's not through step one and two. And the decision doesn't give you any change. It just makes you follow through. Now, how do you know if you've taken one, two, and three? You're doing step four and five, six, seven, eight, nine. How do you know if you've done one, two, and three? Every day you're doing 10 and 11. And it says, step three is a decision, but that you get the promises that we read every meeting after you're in step nine and you're in step 10, you're in the world of the Spirit. So I think I'll stop it there. I don't know, I thought this was really good review of the first two steps. And it gets even better. There's really good information. So if you can bring the handout, and don't let me review anymore. We're on page 44, okay? So I'm going to mark it, and we'll cover this next week. Welcome to the new people. I hope you got something out of this. Thank you.